Hey everyone, welcome back to the show. Today's episode is with Gary Sisker from Ride Engine. He joins us from La Ventana, Mexico to introduce the brand, what products they are currently working on. We talk about a little how he got into the wind industry and how he fell in love with wind in the first place. I really do hope you enjoy it. It was a fun episode. Now, if you haven't had the opportunity to listen to last week's episode, it was with Mario and Andreas from Levitas Foils. They joined us to share their personal passion wind stories, how Levitas got started, and then what the tricks are behind making a very fast foil. So that one's also a good one, and I would urge you to listen to that one as well. Now, don't forget, if you want to support our show, there are multiple ways to do so. The easiest way is to follow us on Instagram, YouTube, and on your favorite podcast provider like Spotify and Apple Podcasts. We'd ask you to give us a 5-star review if you'd like. Those do go a long way. Now, if you want to help out in the day-to-day, visit winglifepodcast.com and click on Support Us to donate a few dollars or jump on a monthly subscription. We appreciate your support and we hope you enjoy today's episode. Welcome to the Wing Life Podcast, where we talk about wing foiling and the lifestyles of those who enjoy this great sport. Anyways, hey Gary, thanks for making this happen, man.
It was awesome to meet you in Hood and get to know your team. Super stoked to chat.
Sweet. I'm stoked to be here, Lou. So yeah, let's do this. I don't know what we're going to talk about. We'll probably go off on some crazy tangents. We could talk about all kinds of things, Baja. We could talk about, I guess, winging a bit. We can talk about the brand, Ride Engine. Talk about me. Talk about why winging's rad and foiling's rad. I don't know. I'll let you go with it.
Let's start with Baja because I'm going to be working with La Saladita Kite School up there. They got some wing foil gear waiting for me, so they'll shout out for Ando. But how have the conditions been?
Ando's one of my homies. He's amazing. So you're stoked. Yeah, I love that guy.
Always full of happiness.
Totally. Much love. Dude, it's been epic down here. I mean, I've been lucky enough for the past, it's going on 4 years now, actually. This is my fourth year that, Ride Engine /7 Nation, which is like the mothership of the whole thing. They have encouraged kind of remote working during certain times of the year, just so we could be in the market and be in touch with the market more. So we chose La Ventana because it's kind of on the same time schedule as the West Coast. You know, we're only running about an hour ahead of what it is on the West Coast, you know, pack Pacific time. And two, it's like an epicenter of everything that goes on in terms of our business, you know, from obviously all the wind sport stuff. Doesn't matter if it's kiteboarding, winging, you know, even the windsurf side of things, there's still a posse of windsurfers down here and all things foiling. Like it does, you can get it all here. The Ando will probably get it all going for you too, whether it's winging downwind, the downwind gig. It's absolutely a magical place here because of the setup for the downwind side of things. And then on the deep end of the bay where all that swell ends up on the beach, is actually some really good prone foiling and toe foiling and surfing at the end of the day if there's a big norte. So hopefully you'll score one of those and you'll get the whole enchilada since we're in Mexico here. Yeah.
It's chile. My favorite breakfast is chilaquiles. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right, but have you had that before?
You got it. Yeah. A bunch of tortilla chips smeared with cheese and some eggs and some sauce. Boy, that's really good. Steps away after a big night on the mezcal or tequila. Woo, there you go.
All right, really we're going to have to come visit. So you're down there. I take it then you're a big water sports fan, given the fact that you're working for Ride Engine. So how did that all start? When did you kind of meet wind and fall in love with it for the first time?
Yeah, man. Well, wind, it's a weird one for wind. We'll kind of start with the water sports thing, I guess, because that's kind of the way it led into the wind thing. But I grew up in Southern California, and as all kind of most coastal kids and my generation, we all shied away from the team sports side of things and really got into surfing and skateboarding and all that kind of stuff. And that was it right there. Surfing was kind of my first passion, and started surfing at a young age and kept going on with that. And eventually I was lucky enough while I was actually going to university and so forth, I got a job offer in the surf industry with a sunglass company. And so I was able to really mesh what I love, you know, which was staying in the water and surfing, and all the other things with skateboarding and snowboarding, all that kind of fun stuff too. But, you know, primarily surfing, I was able to, you know, mesh that with my career, and that's kind of how it all got started. So, you know, kicked it off then at that point in time, and then, and just stayed in quote unquote the action sports industry all the way through and through, until I went on a little bit of a, I don't want to say a sabbatical, but my wife and myself, we moved to Peru and we opened a yoga and wellness retreat down there in 2006.
Oh, no way.
And prior to that, we ended up there for surfing for the main thing in northern Peru in this town called Mancora. And lo and behold, it's windy there basically 200 days a year. And all my Peruvian buddies were already kite surfing. And I was like, oh man, looks like I'm going to have to learn how to do that. And, you know, one thing led to another, and I fell in love with kite surfing and the wind sport side of things. And as my career developed and so forth, and a few brands that I was working for was kind of moving on to other pastures. After I moved back from Peru, I was approached by another wind sport brand to run their wind sport division, and that's how I got into the business of the wind side of things, which I will say for the record, no matter what all you other industry people say out there, it's the hardest business I've ever been in right existence.
Has it? In what capacity, I guess?
Man, you know, it's boy, I'll tell you what, I think winging is probably the sport that could crack the code to one, just creating a larger user group. I mean, that's what it is at the end of the day.
Yep.
You know, wind sports, you know, windsurfing. I wasn't a windsurfer, so I don't know much about what happened there other than hearsay from the legends that are still in the, you know, in the industry. And it seems like windsurfing kind of the gear outpaced the participant at everything from a usage, a ease of usage to expense to all that, to where it just became a sport that wasn't that attractive anymore and basically crashed. I mean, that's from what I gathered from the whole thing. And then, you know, kiteboarding came along, and that was like the next, you know, greatest wind sport thing. And it really was. I remember, you know, before this is when I was living in Peru, and we kind of marketed the kiteboarding a little bit at our little resort and so forth. You know, we had guide trips to all the spots and everything with guests that were staying with us. And, you know, I'd get these little articles like fastest growing water sport, kiteboarding, woo, you know, it's the executive new golf. No, executives don't want to go golfing anymore. They want to go kiteboarding. Woo.
Yeah.
So it was great. You know, it's like, hey, cool. This sport is going to be the one, you know, to achieve the heights of what windsurfing was, or, you know, even eclipse it. But I think kiteboarding has some inherent things, you know, with it too. You know, one is you have to deal with lines and a kite, and you have to take lessons, no joke. Like, it's a sport that you just can't, you know, go on down to your local sporting goods store, surf shop, and buy yourself a kite and go throw that thing up in the sky and think you're going to survive. So
not with kiting.
You know, you do have to get some professional instruction. You know, and then it's limited in access at the end of the day. You know, you need a large space. You know, and then number two is what is really cool is the kiteboarding community is really tight because it is a community sport at the end of the day. You really can't be a lone wolf kiteboarder. I mean, they're out there. Trust me. I was one in Peru, you know, where you could be self-sufficient, go to some far off beach, self-launch, self-land, get yourself into a whole heap of trouble out of the water and survive it all. Very few of those.
Doesn't happen often though.
which makes it a cool sport though, you know, cause you know, you want a buddy with you always looking out, someone to help you land.
Yep.
But it's also a barrier at the end of the day too. It's like, okay, cool. Now I need a buddy to go to this. I'd rather just go ride a mountain bike. I can do that alone.
That's
whatever.
True.
So kiteboarding kind of plateaued out, you know, and so forth. And the, you know, now we got winging coming into the mix and just the whole foil thing in general, which I think going back to my original statement of where this industry or this market's been so hard, it's just you know, we have a finite amount of participants. Yep. You know, globally, I think a lot of people can end up on some beaches, especially on the kiteboarding side. Like you drop into a place like, you know, Tarifa in you know, Spain, and you're like, oh my God, kiteboarding must be the biggest sport on the planet because there's, you know, a couple thousand kiteboarders on this small stretch of beach, you know, or you show up on the Hood River at the event site on a busy day and you're just like, whoa, man, it's crazy. Kiteboarding must be huge. But, you know, at the end of the day, it's like, it's a small user group. So, and you have a lot of brands fighting for that user group also. So,
you definitely do.
You know, I think the barrier to entry, you know, from a manufacturing side, is probably quite low. Like you and me could go start a kite brand tomorrow and probably get some kites made or some wings, yep, for that matter. So the barrier to entry is quite low. I think it's a shiny rad thing that a lot of people want to get involved with. So there's always kind of money floating around it that people are like, yeah, let's invest in this kiteboarding thing or what do you think, start a new brand. And so there's just a lot of brands. So you're fighting, you know, it keeps stacking on top of each other and we just need to get more participants, you know, and that's one thing that we're trying to focus on at Ride Engine. Well, not just Ride Engine, just really Seven Nation, which is the mothership. They own Slingshot and Ride Engine. You know, we run from a marketing standpoint, you know, even and from a product standpoint, pretty autonomously. We run off separate everything. You know, we have our own teams. We share team riders. We share marketing plans. We share events, but we also do our own stuff.
Okay.
But a big objective is as these two brands is really trying to grow the participation pool, you know, and educate people on, you know, actually all the sports, but I think winging is the one and foiling is the one that can really drag some people in from the surf community, the sailing community. You know, it can bring people off the coastal side of things into the inside of like lakes and so forth, because the accessibility is a lot easier than kiteboarding, so to speak. The gear is a lot more, I will say, what I believe, friendly than windsurfing gear and kiteboarding gear. You know, so it's kind of cool. And you don't, you know, obviously lessons, taking some lessons from, you know, Ando will accelerate your advancement and progression of wing foiling to becoming a professional wing foiler. But it is a sport that, you know, you could teach a buddy or you can go out there and try to muster it on your own. Obviously the learning curve will take a while, but you know, you could go do it. If you could swim, you could do it.
Yeah, it's less, yeah, you got less access issues, less danger in the sense of getting dragged. Windsurfing's safe, but you got so much equipment. It's really expensive. It's difficult to drag around. But now, yeah, we're curious to see if it's going to jump that like sup chasm that supping came around with. And we would love to see winging and foiling reach that, where it's like every single person had a sup. That's what we're hoping for winging, because it is, kids are getting into it. And I don't think we've seen, like, actually, maybe you're the better person to tell me. Have you seen such an accelerated growth in younger kids in sports in a long time?
Then you mean specifically wing foiling or wind sports in
maybe
general,
like wing foiling compared to kiting, you know, or compared to windsurfing even? Because like you got 14-year-olds competing on tour now, or 14, 15, but windsurfing, you can't really get the hang of that until you got some body strength and some different stuff. You got 8 to 10-year-olds starting. Like I know lessons on Vancouver Island, they start at minimum 8, but this is something that's so much easier for kids.
Oh, absolutely. No, and I think, you know, we're seeing more and more kids. I see a ton of kids. You'll see them next week down here in La Ventana. We see a whole crew, obviously, in Hood River, and, you know, Christopher's leading that charge on influencing a lot of kids to you know, get into the sport and so forth. I do believe youth is like the lifeblood for sure. Like, I think getting more and more kids involved in the sport of winging is going to be really important for the longevity and the health of it and so forth. Making sure that it doesn't turn into a dad sport, so to speak, or a retirement sport.
Yeah.
Would be absolutely amazing. But, you know, think about it. The winging still is like, oh man, it's really new, right? At the end of the day, I mean, yeah, it's like Tony Lagos, he was probably the first guy to, you know, legitimately use an inflatable wing, you know, and go hydrofoil it, or even he was trying it with a windsurfer way back in the day. But, you know, what the sport's like really legitimately been around, well, like 4 or 5 years
yeah.
now, right?
Yeah.
Maybe even just call it 3 years in terms of the acceleration and like what people are finally, the gear is like hit this, you know, point of like everything's already pretty good, you know? I mean, it still keeps unfolding and people are discovering new stuff and how to develop new products to make it easier, make the performance higher and so forth, make it more durable. But it's still really mm-hmm. young. Yeah. So need to keep kind of pushing the sport and getting youth involved and into creating a pathway, you know, to have access to the sport, I think is really cool. You know, I watched this documentary, which is kind of about windsurfing. I don't know if you've seen it. It's called Broken Molds.
Yeah.
It's a Red Bull documentary, Schweitzer, you know, family and all that stuff. And it's really insane to see how, like, what they, like, one is I didn't know windsurfing was even born in Southern California. That's really weird. There's, like, not much wind, but there it is. But it was really interesting to see how, like, they got out there, you know, with this new sport and, like, took it to these areas. And obviously Europe is what latched on to it big time. And doing these events that were like, you know, where a general, you know, participant can go and have a good time. And I think that's one of the things that we kind of, I don't know what the answer is for that, what type of event it is. Maybe it's an event without a foil. Maybe it's something like that, you know, just to get people introduced, to get that first sensation of like, you know, harnessing the wind and screaming across the water or putzing across the water or whatever. Cause that, definitely that's, you know, a sensation and a hook that gets into you. It got into me for kiteboarding and now I wing it.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's like being that energy is absolutely amazing. And I think if you can, you know, administer the first hit of that, for sure people will get addicted.
Yeah, I think so. Like it's such a therapy for, like, you got a wide range of people and reasons why we do these sports, but it's such a therapy for a lot of people. And it keeps you getting up. It keeps you keeping yourself in shape. Like all these different things that you need that keep you off some other paths that you would quite easily go down if we didn't have this stuff. So I'm really thankful for it. I am kind of curious though, what it's going to be. Is it more so all the brands come together, give a bit of more money, marketing money to something like AWSI, that found like the association? Is it them that start to put out a bit more information, how friendly this stuff is? Because like if everybody is like, it is a small pool, but I do feel like, I don't know, it could be the thing that helps us get over that, because you can do it with a sup. You can like add that little, you can add in on a skeg a little bit. Like you can have a decent time on that. Like Slingshot came out with that, the sup winder there a couple years ago. So there are some of those floating around. Like there is some aspect of that could be brought on to everybody. So I don't know. I'm curious though. The gear's getting way better. Like everything is accelerating at such a rapid pace.
Yeah, you know, because I think the barrier right now, you know, would be the fear of the foil. There's definitely a fear of foil.
Yeah.
it's a pretty foreign thing, and that's probably the only barrier to it right now, because I don't think people are necessarily afraid of the wind and all that kind of stuff when it comes to a wing. But yeah, I don't know if it's AWSI. You know, AWSI is super focused on, you know, just internal trade show, you know, trade industry type stuff. The GW
potentially, yeah.
Potentially, I mean, I think those guys, you know, that whole crew, Jurgen and crew, are doing an absolutely amazing job at running events and creating a pathway for professionals, which obviously if you're a kid and you get super into it and you want to become a professional, they're creating that, you know, that pathway to where you can, you know, have a career and, you know, as a professional athlete, hopefully in winging. So that will grow.
That is true, actually. Yeah. That's a good point. Yeah.
And then that could, you know, fan out once, you know, those stories start to get out and, you know, people are starting to, you know, have a career in something they love, like winging, you know, on the participation on the professional level, then hopefully that would, you know, drag more people into it too,
right.
You know, from, you know, off the coast, on the inland lakes and waterways and all that stuff, and get into
it. Yeah. And so. They're like, they're bringing in a bunch. Like this year was their first year. They had their surf discipline. They had their big air discipline. Like they partnered with Red Bull just on big air, but still, that's pretty cool. So like to see all those different disciplines to slowly grow and grow. Yeah, it definitely give kids an opportunity to see the world a little bit, right? And then push that sport, and then everybody can kind of hop on. But how does the ride engine story start? My brother's a huge kiter, and I started my wind sports and windsurfing, and I still windsurf, and so we have that friendly camaraderie in a family. But he's riding your harnesses, loves them, and does a lot of surf and stuff, so has been definitely liking that. But yeah, what's the story behind Ride Engine?
Yeah. No, it's a super interesting story. Coleman Buckley is the founder, and he was in Santa Cruz. He's first and foremost a surfer also, and he ended up in Santa Cruz. He grew up just, I think, north of the Bay Area and planted himself, down in the surfing epicenter. And he also fell in love with kiteboarding and the wind sport aspect of it, and, go to Waddell every day there. And he felt like there was, as the equipment of kites and bars and boards was, that was progressing, the technology and harnesses was the same harness people were using for windsurfing back in the 80s, I guess, what I mean? Like there wasn't really a lot of advancement, in harnesses other than putting a bunch of crazy colors on them or more layers of fake leather and stuff like that. And he was really the first one that brought in a very high performance aspect to the harness, which is a very important piece of equipment because it's around your body, right? It's the thing harnessing your power, whether you're on a windsurfer and you're, using a harness or whether you're with a kite. I mean, you're hooked in 99.9% of the time. It's like, it's a very critical piece of equipment. So Coleman he has an engineering background, and he started to make custom harnesses for people. And that slowly but surely, he was doing them in his garage. He would basically send you out a packet of this stuff called Instamorph. You can go buy it at your local hardware store. You would create a slurry of that, mold it around your back, heat it up. That thing, it would harden. You'd send it back to him. He would create a mold off of that mold that you sent him to be able to do a carbon lamination around it. Do a carbon lamination, and boom, you had this custom harness that was built to your, specifically to your back. Be very similar to having a custom insole.
Custom skates, all that kind of stuff.
Basically the same. So he grew the business pretty well with that, but he was a one-man show building harnesses in his garage and breathing a lot of resin and all that kind of fun stuff. And trying to figure out what he wanted to do, and that's when the Slingshot crew approached him, and he ended up merging with Slingshot.
No way.
And Slingshot ran from Coleman, and at that point in time it was called Engine, and then when it got into the fold with Slingshot or under the Seven Nation, it turned into Ride Engine. And this all started going down. I think Coleman's first harness he built was maybe in 2014.
Oh, no way.
Yeah, 13.
Whoa, so this is new.
Yeah. Young guy doing this stuff. And it was right around 2016 is when it was brought into Slingshot. I think the first harnesses they released was like product year 2017, basically. So that's how it all started. And, I entered the mix into Ride Engine in 2019. They didn't have specifically a, brand manager or a brand director specifically for Ride Engine, and they saw the growth of the brand had a trajectory. They needed someone to help that along, and luckily I got the call to do it. And I was like, and it was a great time because I was looking at transitioning out of what I was doing at that point in time, fighting too many battles I didn't want to fight anymore. And so I was like, let's do this.
That sounds cool.
The whole thing around it was to keep the brand ethos going that Coleman, really out of his passion and his knowledge, keep those same ethos of high performance, best in class, innovative product, but expand upon that product line. So take it out of harnesses and move that into wetsuits, move that into accessories, you know, things that, you know, help you connect to your board, you know, things that accessories that help you stay protected, you know, so going into protection deeper and stuff like that. And yeah, so that's where we're at, you know, and we're just slow, surely, you know, harnesses.
Can we talk a bit about those harnesses? Like what, like getting picked up after a couple of years by Slingshot, that's quite a feat. Like not every product that goes, like what made his harnesses unique comparative to everything else that was on the market?
Yeah. So, I mean, really, he invented what's called the hard shell.
That's it.
So by using a carbon backing in the harness, that's what created a harness revolution and made everyone fall back on their heels and go, oh my gosh, here it is. The better mousetrap has been built.
Yeah.
And it obsoleted everything. It really obsoleted everything on the market, had everyone scrambling. So that's really it right there. I mean, as simple as that sounds, it was really difficult. Amazing idea born through building custom carbon backplates and sewing neoprene around them for individuals. So then it turned into like when it was brought into, you know, to be the sister brand of Slingshot, how do you commercialize that? You know, because obviously custom molding harnesses is going to be really tough when you start scaling out. We want retail distribution, you know, retail partners and international distribution partners and all that. It's like, oh gosh. The beauty about Coleman is he definitely keeps a lot of things around, stacks of surfboards, stacks of blanks, and stacks of people's molds.
Oh, nice.
He pretty much kept every single mold that he was taking. He didn't know what to do with them. He didn't want to send them to the landfill. He's a very environmentally savvy individual that's conscious of all that. And he's like, someday I'll figure out something that I'll do with these things. But the short story on that though is those molds provided a data set for Ride Engine that not another harness brand on the market has. So we were able to scan all those molds, didn't scan them all because they were...
Yeah, how many did you have?
It was probably just over 1,000, I want to say, maybe just right around 1,000. But we were able to scan a lot in the tune of hundreds to basically get that, what we call an average Joe or an average Jane. And two bits of information came out of that scanning the back plates is the lower lumbar shape in the human, you know, anatomy is the same for men's and women's. So that lumbar and the shape of the spine and everything is actually the same. Obviously, men and women from a body standpoint are quite, you know, are quite different. But realize that, you know, to make a mold, to make a carbon shell, we can basically average all that stuff out and fit, you know, what we feel is probably 99.9% of the people out there with a lot better fitting harness for kiteboarding and windsurfing than any other harness on the market still to this day. So we feel ours fit way better. And I think the consumer feels so too, that our harness fits way better than most of our competitors out there. Plus it comes with a lot of other benefits too, you know, if you think about a shoe, if you didn't have an insole in your shoe or in your ski boot or your snowboard boot, your foot would kind of move around quite a bit. You know, that filling that arch space locks your foot in. Well, it's the same thing in your lower lumbar. Filling that lower lumbar back space with something that's actually more rigid with support, not just with filling it with
foam,
creates a lot more support around your body. So especially with kiteboarding, you have the kite above your head a lot. The kite's pulling to the side a lot, and that shape of the harness will lock it into place. Hence our technology called lumbar lock. So you get a lot less twisting, a lot less rise, creating a harness that's way more comfortable and way higher performance than a lot of harnesses out there.
No way.
So
okay.
That's it. Yeah. And we're expanding this stuff. You know, we did expand the line of harnesses. So now we have multiple flexes. We realize that people, there's riders out there that want a harness that has a bit more flex, but we keep that ride engine lumbar DNA through all that, because that data transfers even into how we make our soft harnesses. And we're actually using that in wing foil harnesses too.
Yeah, I was going to ask about that.
When we're coming into new wing foil harnesses that we're releasing with shaping and so forth, we're putting in some materials like curved material, which is a composite material that you can thermoform that stays extremely rigid. It's not carbon. The beauty about it is it's really light, doesn't absorb water. You don't have to laminate it with a bunch of resins. And it's perfect for wing foil harnesses. And we can make an ultra lightweight wing foil harness with a ton of support. And you don't have to crank it down, and it stays in place.
Ooh, nice. When did you guys start working on that kind of thing?
We've released our first wing foil harness 3 years ago. We felt, hey, we know harnesses are going to be used. It's only a natural progression.
Yeah.
A lot of the testers for Slingshot were already using harnesses so they could be on the water longer, test upwind performance, do all that kind of stuff. It was a way also to see how the wings are balanced and so forth. So we were, I want to say, the first brand of if you want to call it magnitude or scale or like large distribution that did a wing foil harness. I will say NSI and Hood River, you know, they came out with a wing foil harness pretty quickly and so forth. So I got to give those guys high fives. But we were pretty much, I think, developing at the same time. They were a little bit more nimble and getting it to market. Kudos to them. But yeah, it was pretty much just us and them. And now you look at it, and every major brand out there that makes wind sport accessories has wing foil harnesses. And I do feel...
Yeah, what goes into making like a good, like from all the R&D that you guys have been doing, what do you feel goes into making a good wing foil harness that you don't really want it there. It's only there when you're doing a certain purpose. And then you don't want your board getting damaged if you're crawling onto that thing. Like, there's a lot of variables that come into that, right?
Yeah, totally. And you know, what wing foiling, especially for me, the big draw is the freedom of it, you know? Like, you don't need a harness at the end of the day, really. Like, and truth be told, I'm kind of 50-50 on the harnesses. Like, I'll use a harness if I'm going upwind to grip. Like, if I'm, say, at home in Hood River and I don't want to drive around to the hatchery and I just want to launch from the Hood River side and beat my way up to the hatchery, it's way easier to do with a harness without a harness.
Okay, you know, gassed. Yeah.
Upwind routes like that. In certain surf situations, like we do, I go to Peru once a year, normally in September, to chase waves.
Nice, man.
A lot of the waves are super long, offshore conditions, and it's really nice to like wop yourself in a harness and just, you know, get right back up to the point extremely quickly and without smoking your arms. So you pull yourself into the next wave. So it's like, you know, but then again, like if I'm going out for a downwinder, like if I'm just going to plop in the water and go for a downwinder, you know, I'm using the wing a bit to get me into a piece of swell. And then, well, obviously the game there is to try not to touch the wing as much as you can, right? You know, just keep connecting butts. In that situation, I will use a harness. But I do think at some point, like we always say, it's not kind of if you're going to use a harness, it's when. I think the everyone you start looking at or start to use harnesses more and more, and it's like once you use it once, like it took me us having to develop it and be like, okay, cool, we're going to make a harness, and then me using a harness to be like, oh my gosh, this is pretty insane. And our designer Julian Fillion, he won't even go, like he will go without a harness. He feels like, no, I'll on the beach, you know? but yeah, so what goes into it, you know, when we first started developing, we wanted to emulate that freedom. You know, we wanted to make it the least obtrusive. We actually were just like, it doesn't need a hard shell or anything like that. We wanted to make it versatile enough to where you can, you know, hook a board leash to the back of it or hook your wing leash to it. So, you know, you could eliminate, say, just your webbing wing leash, you know, if you're using a webbing waist leash to your wing, or if you're using a waist leash to your board. So we had features in there like that. The other thing, like you pointed out, sliding hook was critical. So, you know, whether you got a paddle out in the beginning, you know, through surf, you can move the hook out of the way so it doesn't, you know, if you one, you're not laying on it, right? As a person, that's pretty uncomfortable. And two, so it wouldn't ding your board. Or if you get stuck with no wind and you just have to
paddle
go
home
for a paddle, you know what I mean? You can move the hook. So that was critical too. So we made in the Vinaka harness just a very minimal yet supportive, so you weren't point loading a ton, you know, because you still get a, you know, some pull through the harness line, wing harness. And now what we've been doing is we're realizing that a little more support is great. We could actually use a little less material to achieve it by taking some of our hard shell knowledge from the hard shell technology and applying that to a wing harness. So now we can eliminate layers of neoprene or other padding or points where we have to anchor, per se, the webbing and so forth, because it's all integrated with our shell technology. So we can make a lighter harness with more support that is actually more simple overall than our first harness that we made in the Vinaka. So it's kind of cool the way that stuff is evolving.
Yeah, overall. Definitely.
Plus, there's other cool things coming out. I mean, everything comes around, right? Like, you know, chest harnesses. That's like starting to become a thing, I think, you know.
Maybe something coming.
Or a couple interesting reasons on why a chest harness is a little bit nicer to use than a waist harness, namely the length of the harness line. So, you know, the pain in the butt. I don't know if you've used a harness yet.
But I just didn't.
You have to lock off the harness.
I didn't look the
when you're starting.
There's a freaking lines. Like, I didn't like the fact that they were so long. I didn't want to get caught up in them if I fell. And then I already get slapped in the face with when I'm pumping some cold water. I switch to hooking up my wing harness to my belt because I run a belt for my board.
Yeah.
So that I found has helped a little bit. I can kind of keep it out of the way. But then it just seemed like I was already tied to the board for most of us who are riding leash, because if you're on a lake and if you fall off, your board's gone. And I lost it this summer and it was a big ordeal. And thankfully it ended up at the bottom of the lake and I didn't get, like the wind didn't shift overnight. And so I said, I already have two ropes. I don't know if I want a third, but if you're looking at a bit of a higher harness than shorter lines, and that might not be. Yeah, I see what you're saying.
Huh? Yeah, totally. So there's all kinds of things. It's ever evolving.
Yeah,
everyone's chasing it, right?
We all are.
So yeah. So it's pretty cool on that front, you know, in terms of how the sport, you know, how our product line is evolving with the sport, and how we're, you know, trying to push new innovation technology the same way to make, you know, the sport more enjoyable, make the user experience on the water more enjoyable, make everyone progress faster. I mean, that's what everyone's chasing, right? Like, you chase your first jibe, then you're chasing your tack, and then you're chasing swell, and then you're chasing whatever, you know. It's like, yeah, we want to try to make that easier overall, you know, with the accessories.
That makes sense. So what else is there in the wing world at Ride Engine that people should know about?
Totally. Well, obviously everyone probably uses a wetsuit. That's not specific to winging, but we make a phenomenal wetsuit. Obviously I'm biased, we feel like it's the best in the world, but it is backed by material science and construction. Like, it's just, you know, it's kind of like when you look at a great outerwear jacket, you know, you don't bat an eye. Like, if you want the best outerwear jacket, you know, on the market, what material do you get? Gore-Tex, probably, right? So, like, when you look now at neoprene, you know, we're using Yamamoto number 40, which is the highest grade sustainable limestone-based neoprene known to man. It has proprietary geometric structure that's warmer. It's highly elastic, easy to get on and off, which that plays in the elasticity. We use recycled, you know, lamination for our Lycra. So, you know, neoprene is laminated on the inside and the outside. We use really nice, smooth, silky lamination of the Lycra that makes it easier to get on and off. less fatiguing. It has a higher memory value. So you buy one of the ride engine onsen suits, you probably have it for a few, you know, few more seasons than a lot of other ones out there, because it just lasts longer and doesn't bang out and get stretchy or is not as impacted by, you know, salt or debris or getting super stiff. I don't know if you realize you let your wetsuits kind of sit over, say, the summertime, then all of a sudden you go try to squeeze into that 5-4-3, like for your first session of the winter. You're like, what in the world's going on here?
I hit the gym and it's working, right?
Yeah, we wallowed up stuff with just the material science and using an absolutely amazing neoprene. And then, you know, construction wise, you know, construction for wetsuits, we're using glued and blind stitch, fully taped suits. I mean, we did have a line of suits that had this thing called power seam on them, and there's still a few out there, which is like a rubberized seam on the outside. And just through longevity and durability, that seam tends to crack if you leave it in UV too long, like i.e. drying, you know, out in the baking sun here in Mexico or whatever. So we wanted to create a more durable wetsuit, and just having a tried and true glued and blind stitch seam with fully taping on the inside for the waterproofing is the way to go. And yeah, so we make amazing wetsuits, so which is definitely needed for waiting.
Yeah, especially here.
And the protection side. Yeah. Then, you know, one big thing, you know, since I've been on board is like increasing our protection category. And I really feel like when you look at it, you know, kiteboarding, you know, people were kind of not like, if you're wearing an impact vest, you're always viewed. This is back in the day now.
This even is all changing. Now, but still, yeah, kind of ish. Yeah, you're a wuss.
Yeah, you're kind of thinking because you're wearing an impact vest, it probably means you're not confident or whatever. But, you know, when you look at winging, it's pretty much standard, like uniform. Yeah, like an impact vest and helmets. Yeah. Because you got more things going on when you fall. Like, inevitably, even if you're an absolutely proficient, amazing wing foiler, you're probably going to scissor over at some point in time, right? Something's going to catch you off guard. You're going to, like, end up going over one side of the rail, and the foil's going to come up, and, you know, you might catch the foil in a place you don't want to catch the foil. Yeah. So, you know, having an impact vest is, you know, something that's highly recommended, and obviously a helmet, you know, getting hit by your foil or your board is not going to do anyone any good. So it's a really critical part of our line that we're developing more and more around. We did develop a specific, we were really the first ones to develop a specific impact vest for hydrofoiling that crossed through all sports. So it's called the Defender HF, which HF stands for hydrofoil. And we took some of our hard shell technology, and through a bit of analysis, crash analysis, talking to our pro riders, talking to our lesson centers that were teaching wing foiling, where people were kind of taking the most strikes overall.
Oh, interesting.
We put hard shell protection underneath the actual soft protection. So you get a little extra layer of defense on there. And then we designed that impact vest kind of cross into every sport. So like the way that the protection is laid out, it's really easy to paddle with. So if you had to paddle wing foiling, you don't have a bunch of stuff in your sternum or your lower abdomen. If you're prone foiling, it's really unobtrusive. It doesn't have a ton of soft padding, but, you know, it's not a life vest by, you know, that's not what these impact vests
are
for.
No, they're not rated for that.
These impact vests are there.
No.
Yeah, they're there to protect you from impact, whether it's, you know, from your equipment or any environmental impact, you know, if you fall over on the beach, I guess. But yeah, we're really proud of that one. And you know what the most interesting part that when we were talking to a ton of our riders, other pro riders, and our, you know, the people teaching lessons, that they wanted was actually like a hard piece in the shoulder because it carried your foil.
Oh, yeah.
You know. You actually have a little piece of hard shell protection there underneath the soft protection, so like, you know, you can throw your board over your shoulder and your mask isn't just going to absolutely dig into your, you know, the top of your shoulder. So
because that is one thing, like I carry it down, it must be like almost, I don't know if it's a kilometer, but I normally throw the impact vest on, which is super thick on the shoulder, but then as soon as it rubs, obviously, yeah, That helps. And the other aspects of it, impact wise, yeah, that makes sense. I've scissored twice. Year number two, I was tax, both sides, went both ways, and I was teaching clients what not to do, and I just did that. So definitely saved my butt because I fell, I gutted myself, and obviously almost took the foil out of the back. And talking helmets, my buddy did the same thing last year, ripped his head open because he didn't have one on, and he was just in the water, his foil came up, he wasn't paying attention to it, he looked away, the foil just, all it did was fall down. And that's all he needed, he got rushed to the hospital. Totally. So for everybody out there, I think we are big proponents of using both those pieces of equipment. It's good that there's some good R&D as well going into that, because it's just going to make people's lives a bit easier and more comfortable. And what are you thinking helmet-wise? Like how far down on, like what are you guys taking into consideration when you're making one of those now?
Yeah. Don't want to let the cat out of the bag too big, but
stuff that's already out or whatever.
One is, I do think back to the neck protection is really important. You know, there's a soft helmet brand out there that has like a little back of the neck protection thing, which is really smart in my opinion. And we're looking at working in a hard shell helmet with having better EVA and hard shell protection overall. That's more specific to surfing, hydrofoiling, you know, than kind of those bobblehead ones right now that are out there, you know? So, you know, you look at it, like Gaff is doing an absolutely amazing job. There's another brand out there called Simba that's doing a really good job in my book. And, you know, I think there's still some improvement that can be made, you know, in those styles of helmets that we just might be working on.
All right, we can talk later about it. Then you got to tune into the Wing Life podcast to get that information, of course, but we can talk about that. And my buddy asked me, because he saw the Airbox, and he was like, what is this thing? And he wanted to find out a little bit more information about it.
Yeah, that's a thing that will absolutely make your dreams come true on the beach, right? So, boy, it was a while ago, you know, say 12-volt, air compressor, a little air compressor for your SUP. They've been around forever, right? Like you plug into your cigarette lighter or whatever, and do your little 12-volt adapter in your car, and you can fill up your SUP next to your car. And it's always been one of those things where I'm like, oh, shoot, I would love to develop one of those, but not the smartest engineers in the room when it comes to little tiny air compressors and things like that.
Yeah, that's true.
All of a sudden, one day, I would always search out, like, be like, God, someone's got to make a rechargeable pump, like something. And then all of a sudden, this thing popped up on this Kickstarter gig, you know? And I'm like, holy cow, someone's doing this thing. It's like this tiny little tube thing that, like, you know, is an air compressor. And they're, like, filling up a SUP and they're filling up a wing. And I'm like, holy cows, I'm going to, you know, contribute to this thing and get one of these deals. This is amazing. And I'm like, oh shoot, I'm actually going to call them up because they figured it out. Maybe we could do a collaboration, you know, with these guys for Ride Engine. And, you know, that was on a weird path and everything. And I started to get a little bit like concerned, like, oh my gosh, I think my pledge is probably going. Don't know if we'll ever see this pub and these people. Yeah. I don't know what's going on here. So we did shortly thereafter, you know, with more research, we did find a vendor that was already making a pretty compact pump already that had the technology to do that. And so we, you know, brought to market a rechargeable lithium, you know, ion battery pump that will work for every single major brand out there of wings, kites, fill up your SUPs, which is great. Yeah. And it's awesome. You know, you get about, it depends obviously on the size, but like wing wise, because the leading edges are pretty big and so forth, like you probably get about 6 to 8 wings out of the thing. Kites, you can probably get, you know, 8 to 10, 8, 10, 12 kites out of the deal. And you get probably, depending on the size of the SUP or the, you know, inflatable wing board, you get anywhere from 2 to 4 SUPs.
Oh, nice.
And what's really key about ours for the Airbox, because you can buy these things out there. Like, they're, you know, now they're popping up kind of everywhere, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, but ours is very specific to the wind sport industry. And even though other ones kind of claim, other ones will kind of say like, oh yeah, it's going to fill all this stuff. We all know that in wings and kites, no one really has a proprietary valve, right? Like, there, or people have proprietary valves. So now there's all these different valves out there, whether it's a duotone or a core or a slingshot or north, you know, the list goes on and on. We developed a proprietary nozzle set that will work seamlessly with every single brand out there. So you're not going to like buy one of these pumps, you know, online. You're going to get it, and then you're like, holy smokes, now I got to like go in and put some like, you know, duct tape, electrical tape on my gasket to make it fit with my duotone. Like, none of that. Right out of the box, it's going to fit and inflate perfectly whatever brand that you have.
Nice. Okay.
Plus, we beefed it up a bit for our sports too. You know, like you said, you have to walk in, what, like a K to your place?
Yeah, it's all off grid too.
So in that walk-in, you know, you're carrying pumps, you're carrying all this stuff. Like, heck, you might drop it. It might go into the rocks. It might go into the grass. It's like whatever. So we put a shock case around it that protects it somewhat from the elements. It's not fully waterproof, but it does protect it somewhat from the elements. And two, it protects it from impact. It's a lot better than just having like a regular polycarbonate or you know, nylon case around it.
Oh, so, nice, man.
Yeah, I think super cool. I'll tell you what, once you use it, you'll never want to inflate.
Oh, I got another question too for it. Like, how accurate is it for, because all these different high material wing, like different materials, right? Like, it'll be, this will be up to 10 or 9 or 12, or like with all the Alula and all the different kind of materials that people are using now. Is that where you're going?
I was just going with that because it's interesting, right? So like, you know, the wings, obviously I use slingshot wings, love them. And so does my wife. And they need to be pumped to 10 PSI. And nothing against my wife, but it's really hard for her, even with a sup pump, to get a wing to the proper 10 PSI. So she was always running her wings, you know, super underinflated, you know?
Good point.
And so now with this, it's like you set it to the 10 PSI. You put the thing on, walk away, go put your wetty on, you come back, and it's at perfectly at 10 PSI. The gauge is absolutely, the sensors are spot on. And there are a lot of wings out there. I was into Motu for a little bit. I think there's some of the, you know, Alula wings take a little less inflation because the Alula is so stiff. But there's also some that recommend it to be a little bit, like the strut, to be all the way up to 12 PSI. And same situation, to get a strut 12 PSI can be pretty tough with a regular
switch from like 2 down to 1, and then if you're like 120 pounds or less, it's pretty hard because you could literally see them starting to lift off the ground a bit.
So like I said, with this you can just, you know, plug it in, set the pressure, and, you know, go do a couple other things, come back, and your kit's ready to go.
Okay, it's pretty nice. Good to
And weight wise, it's it's at 1.4 kgs. A regular size, you know, manual pump is like at 1.4 kgs also, other than the, you know, air box is way smaller, so it's easier to travel with. It is lithium ion batteries, so if you do travel on the plane, you have to put it in your carry on. You can't check it in. So similar to like, you know, GoPro drone batteries, whatever, you have to like carry them on. So you do have to, you know, do that. But overall, it's a pretty dreamy situation.
Yeah, I think it's
down here, everyone's fighting for the ones that I brought down here on the beach.
Nice, man. Frank also asked, he was curious about wing foil bags. If that was something.
Yeah,
we were thinking.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So we make a full line of bags, obviously, for travel. We have a wing foil travel coffin. We got three sizes of that, which, quite honestly, you could overstuff.
Yeah.
even the small one, you know, because of the size of the wing foil boards. And then, you know, we made pockets and everything where you can put your, you know, your front wing, your fuse, your stab and all that kind of stuff. Plus you can put wings in there so you can get it heavy pretty quick. But yeah, we have a whole line of travel bags for, you know, for throwing on airplanes. Then we have a whole line of day bags too. And what we call the thermal block bags for wing boards also. And everything from, you know, tiny low volume boards all the way up to 150 liter, you know, 7.6s, all that stuff. They all got, you know, Velcro, mass tracks, and dual zip, super easy getting out of. We do put different than a surf bag, where a surf bag, you know, normally they're always around 4 millimeters, 3 millimeters of closed cell foam. You know, what is called the top lid and the bottom, and then maybe on the rails I'll put like a 5 millimeter foam around that. We do bump that up to where we're pretty much around the whole thing. In our day bags, we're at 7 millimeters on the top cap, bottom cap, and then we're 10 millimeters around okay. the rails. Just because they're more awkward, they're bigger, you know, kind of bigger to move around, you know, in those, you know, 70, 80, 90 liter boards and so forth. So it provides a little more protection overall.
That makes sense. Yeah.
And then our travel bag is 10 mil all the okay. way around.
And what do you recommend for people who, in this instance, I'm not bringing gear, but there's a lot of people getting into travel. Obviously, you've seen a ton of it. What's the best way to pack your wigging gear in there to make sure that your foil doesn't go through your board? Or how? What have you seen?
Yeah. I mean, boy, packing to travel is an art in itself, right? Depending what type of mass connection you have, you know, to your fuse, what your fuse is all about, what size front wing yep. you're running, you know. It's kind of nuts, but I'll be honest with you, I've traveled all over the world. Yeah, like I feel lucky. That's like part of my job.
Oh, yeah.
It's pretty
definitely.
Amazing. Peru, a bunch of things, obviously. Went to Chile for work, went to Fiji for work. I mean, it's beautiful. I know everyone's envious right now, but it was work.
It always is.
But really, this is going to sound funny. I try to go as light as possible, because you know you want to try to stay under whatever the weight restriction is of the airlines. Most of them are what, like 50 pounds or 20, what's that, 23 kgs, 22
yeah.
kgs,
yeah, they're about
something
yeah.
like that, right in there. Some of them, you know, are extending that a bit now for sporting gear, where you can go up to 70 pounds, which those are great airlines that are doing that. But you're gonna laugh, but I really use my wings to pad everything, man.
Okay.
Yeah. So we do have compression straps or like tie down straps on the inside. So like, you know, and the bottom is really beefy of the bag. So like, you don't really have to worry about the bottom of the board or anything. So you chuck the board in there. And then I literally just start laying my wings out all around that board. Like, adding extra around the rails, like I'll just shove my wings.
So like out of their bags and stuff?
Yeah, out of the bags. That's the thing. I don't travel. The best travel companion you could have for wings, I believe, are putting all your wings in compression sacks.
Okay. Yeah, like, I've seen that.
Getting rid of the fancy bag that all these brands feel they need to put a fancy bag with their wings, probably because the wings cost so much. They're like, well, let's put this fancy backpack. But for traveling, the best thing you could do is put them in compression. Just get some Ride Engine compression bags. They're extremely lightweight. They're durable. You can layer those in that bag, you know, in your travel bag out. You know, keep your wings out of those. Use your wings as padding. I always put my mask kind of right along the top of my board, and I cinch it down with the straps, the webbing straps that are in the inside. And the mast plate will kind of sit off the tail of my
board.
Okay,
I was curious, yeah.
Super flat, so that's not gonna, you know, hurt anything. Our inside pockets on the top cap are big enough for pretty much everyone's fuselages out there. So you put that in there, and then you put that all up, and I just slam the front wing on the top of everything and close it up.
Okay.
A lot.
Do you take your hard handles off, or do you leave them on?
That's interesting when you say that. So I didn't have wings with hard handles until this last trip to Peru. And guess what I did? I only traveled with two sets of hard handles, but five wings. So, you know, because some of the hard handles, with the especially with the wings I'm using, the slingshot ones, the smaller wings have smaller handles than the larger wings. And to save on weight, and they're super easy to take on and off. So to save on weight and so forth, I just took two sets of handles. Risky business if you lose a handle, right? But I don't think you lose a handle. But yeah, that's kind of a little tip too, you know, where I was just like, yeah, it takes a little extra in setup. Like if I have to, you know, jump from a, you know, 4.5 to 5.0, you know, because those are the same size handles. So I'd have to like, okay, let's move it up to this one. But it's seconds to do so.
Well, yeah, they're all got super easy bolt on stuff now. And it's, but I could see how packing that could damage some stuff. So that was curious.
Yeah. Just undo that stuff, wrap in the wings. The wing material.
Well, it's supposed to be, it's bomber. It's supposed to be.
Well, yeah, I'm telling everyone the rules, but it's not, you know, we packed it up all nice and tight in that bag. Nothing's gonna happen. Your mask very rarely is gonna rip a hole in your wing. You know, if you worry about that, like your mask connection to your fuselage, just throw your wetsuit top or a wetsuit around it. Okay. You know, just put something around the ends and
and put some clothes and stuff too. And like, I've never had, like, traveling with windsurf gear, I would do it all the time. And I never had any problems with it. I've seen some like danger videos though, where they take that stuff and they just toss it and whatever. Everybody travels with it, but I was curious because I haven't had the opportunity to talk or travel yet with this stuff. So that was kind of cool. Is there anything else ride engine specific regarding wing foiling that you'd like to mention that you think people should have or at least should know about?
Well, yeah, I mean, we touched on the harness. You know, we said like, someday everyone's going to definitely try the harness and probably enjoy it. The protection side is absolutely critical on that front. We talked about wetsuits and bags. And then we do have some really cool, what we call like connection pieces. So like foot straps, leashes and so forth.
Yeah. Let's talk leashes. Yeah. Cause that, like, I use a waist coil. That's about whatever for me. I've never had a problem with it. It doesn't snap back at me cause it's like a thicker coil. I like it because I feel like it's a bit safer because I've lost my board twice without the leash and I don't really feel like doing that again, especially when you're winging by yourself on a big windy long lake, you're not catching that thing. So what are your favorite kinds of leashes for both?
Man, so leashes is a weird personal preference thing, on what people do. You know, for me, because I'm a surfer, I use a coil ankle leash to the board, a really short one. So we make a short coil ankle leash. So it's not flopping off in the water, you know, and just making a bunch of racket off the back of the board. We also make a coil calf leash, which is great. So you can put it around your calf. So that will also lift the leash off the, off the deck of the board. So you don't step on it as much when you're doing foot, you know, when you're switching your feet, it's not going to bounce off the back of the board in the water and so forth. So again, it's a personal preference thing. Both of those leashes, we have shortened them up a little bit specifically for winging. So we're not just using like a standard calf sup leash and then like slamming it on your wing board, mainly to keep that leash out of the water, bouncing around. So it doesn't bounce around in between your feet. So it's not causing a bunch of racket. And then we make, you know, wrist leash and waist leash. Wrist leash obviously would be specifically for the wing. And a waist leash, that can go one of both ways, right? Like both our waist leashes can either go to the board or to the wing. Me, personally, I use a waist leash to the wing all the time. And I really got used to that because I love surf at the end of the day. And when you have to paddle out through a little bit of shore break, and you have to duck dive, and you got to paddle, you got to duck dive, and you got to paddle to get to a clean spot to go. Doing that with a
and it's wrist pretty leash annoying.
Is a little bit tough.
Yeah.
So waist leash for me just is like super key, and I've gotten so used to it because of the wave aspect of it, and then now I just use it wherever. But one key thing on our waist and our wrist leash is we did put releases on them. Adapting what is used in surf leashes for big wave cords, because there's a, you know, like a lot of the big wave leashes, they have releases on them in case you're tombstoning for a long time, your board gets caught, you know, in the whitewash ball and it's dragging you along. Yeah. Like, you know, there's certain instances where you just want to, you know, in heavy surf situations, get
away,
lose your board. Like, you not just hoping for your leash to break, you can actually get it away. But we realized, especially this was here in La Ventana, there was a, down here in Baja, there was a stretch of time where there's a ton of fishing nets out in the water and really long fishing nets. And inevitably, people were getting stuck in these things all day. So they would like run into them foiling. They would go over the handlebars. Yeah. They would end up on one side of the net. Their foil is stuck on the other side of the net. Their wing is flying on this side of the net. Something happened. Oh, you had to release something or get something off. And we just, that I was like, man, we should just make a releasable leash. And then simultaneously, these crazy kiteboarders, sometimes they crash into you.
Yes.
Right? So all of a sudden, you end up with a kite on your head and all these lines. Your leash is wrapped with their lines. They're not releasing. You're going to want to, you know, release at some time, you know. And the other side, too, is in the surf also. If you get wadded by a pretty good-sized wave and you're taking a few on the head and you're using a wrist leash or even a waist leash for that matter, and you're getting, you know, drugged by your wing.
Well, I was talking to Steve at No Limits there, and he was saying, like, he was in Hawaii. He went out on a pretty big day, last wave of the day, and then, yeah, like, obviously he didn't have, because it was an F1 wing he was running. There was only a few. I think the only brand that I had seen was Ocean Rodeo that had that release, but it's cool to know that you guys do too now. And his wing was just stuck, and he was getting dragged under for a good, whatever, 20, 30 maybe seconds. And he was like, okay, I'm going to relax. But he's like, yeah, like, what the heck do you do with this? Because you don't want to, like, I've lost my wing just because, like, out of your hands, right? Like, you happen to fall into a gusty day and I went to take it off my wrist to put it on my ankle so I could paddle in or something, and it was gusting to 30. And sure enough, bobbles, the wind hits, and poof, and there's like, oh, it's gone. So, like, that's on that aspect of things, but the release would have been a lot easier to just boom, boom, right?
Yeah, yeah. No, and it's interesting. I ran into a guy the other day here in La Ventana. He had one of our waist leashes. He was using it to the board, but he was walking around the beach, and he just had the waist leash on and not the cord. And I'm like, I'm going to go see what happened to this guy, you know, like, why he released it. He's like, oh, no, didn't you guys make it for that? Like, I just keep the leash hooked to the board like it is, and it's so easy for me to just plug the thing back in and go.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, my gosh, our consumers, they figure out the most crafty things overall. Here we are. We think we're so smart, thinking of everything, and this guy figured out a totally different adaptation that is absolutely amazing.
Well, it makes packing it easier because right now I have that fairly thicker green coil leash and the waist. I just put it in. I don't take it off, so I'll put it inside my gear bag, but I always try to put it off to the side of the board because I don't want that thing, like, or any of those connections kind of smack in the back of it if something happens to do. So it makes sense. You don't want to be taking it off every time, but yeah, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, we're good with that. And then, you know, the other connection aspect is we have an amazing line of foot straps.
Okay.
And we have foot straps for every flavor of, you know, wing foot strap lover out there, from extremely minimalist, just EVA ones, which, you know, really were designed originally for prone surfing because they lay flat so you can lay on them. And they don't feel like a mess on your chest. And then right when you pop up, they're supported by webbing and they pop up on their own. So you can get your feet in there really quick. But a lot of the wing foil crew love those too because they're so lightweight. They don't absorb any water. And then we have a whole line of other adjustable straps with Velcro D-ring adjustments, with cam lever adjustments. My personal favorite is this ultralight strap, which is, it's not the EVA one. It's a Lycra laminated one that has a little more support around the top of the foot. But you adjust it just by the holes rather than having a webbing strap or a D-ring, you know, strap to tighten it around your foot. And they're really nice, super comfortable, easy to get your foot in and out of. And obviously great, not just for winging, but, you know, for toe surfing, toe foiling. all that kind of fun stuff. So we have really, really any strap that you desire, we got for you for sure.
Do you find for freestyle or for, because I saw a video of Balls not that long ago where he was cinching his straps pretty close together. So they were fairly narrow, but they were higher so he could slip his foot out in case he was getting caught. Is there any strap that you see more popular in wing foiling, or is it pretty much whatever your flavor is, you can go for it?
Yeah, I think it's a flavor. Okay. One is I don't jump. I'm definitely afraid of jumping.
More of a surfer myself.
Yeah.
That's fair.
And I really don't use them in the surf. I did use straps yesterday. It was kind of interesting. I traded boards with my friend, and he had some straps on there. I was like, wow, this is amazing. I need to start using straps again. Just because it makes, like, you can fall, man, pumping, like, you can.
Yeah, I guess you do push and pull, right?
I think it's like wearing on a mountain bike, right? Like, I was just like, this is absolutely crazy. I can, like, just pump forever. Like, so that was kind of interesting. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, I worry sometimes about, I get what Balls is doing. Also have a kick through aspect too. Like I you know, as much as being able to get your foot out really quick, I've seen instances too where like your foot goes through the strap.
Okay.
Like, yeah, if you have it too big, which could be really bad news and so forth. We also make a half strap.
I'm sure you've seen hooks? Those. Yeah. My brother learned how to kite foil on that. Because he went one strap in the front, almost destroyed his hip/knee on a rotation. Said, forget that. Yep. And then switched the hooks, and the hooks were good for beginning. And then he took them off later, and now he's just strapless. And I ride strapless on my board too, because I'm more of a surfer. So like that's what I do winging for. It's the free flow stuff.
Yeah.
And straps have freaked me out a bit in the sense that I didn't want to be, because the wipeouts have been. Wipeouts and winging are hilarious. They're just like these, they're fine. They're more catapulty than windsurfing. Cause when you breach, you just like, almost broke my teeth one time falling forward. Cause you fall forward from 3 feet. And I was on like a 4 or 5 foot set in the Great Lakes. So I'm falling like however many feet falling forward. So I always just didn't like them for that. A lot of people love straps though. But anyways, that it's personal preference, 100%.
Totally.
Yeah. Oh man.
Yeah. That sums it up.
For that.
I mean, we're
cool.
Yeah, we'll work on a lot of other little sneaky projects, which you guys will see in due time. Maybe you'll see some of them down here in La Ventana.
Oh, nice. Yeah. That'd be pretty cool.
But
the other aspect of your job that we were talking about was the fact that you get to like go to all these amazing places with family. And like, are there any kind of highlights of that that you would think that people should know about or?
I mean, Peru, like travel wise, boy, I've been really lucky over the past few years to hit a lot of really rad spots, especially, boy, I'll tell you what, my journey to being a winger was, phew, that was a tough one.
Yeah, I was going
to
ask that too. How'd that go?
I probably quit about no less than a dozen times. And I was just like, phew. And then, finally one day it clicked. I actually remember that day super vividly when I was just on the verge of quitting, and then the head of the director of product for Slingshot, this guy Matt Gustafson, call him Gus, he was like, Siskar, you just need to do it this way. And literally, I wish he would have told me that, like, you know, weeks before.
What were you doing wrong?
Oh man, I was trying to do everything too fast. That's one thing with winging is like, and my wife, she's going through it right now, and a couple of my friends from San Clemente, like where I grew up in California, they're here in La Ventana learning, and I ride circles around them and look at what's going on, and everyone's trying to do everything so fast. Yeah, they're not like trusting the glide of the foil. They're not realizing like how far you can go and how you can slow things down. You know, and like you know, just like in a jibe, like. Dude, just cruise downwind for a second. Like, you're going to keep going. And then you can be like, oh my God, there's that. And there's that. Oh, I'm going the other way now.
Yeah.
Like, it's like, and that's what Gus told me.
Okay.
It's like, you do things so fast. You're trying to like do kiteboard style transitions or, you know, surf kite style transitions. He goes, that's
not here.
It's not what it's about. He's like, draw that stuff out. I was like, Cam brought it out. Oh my gosh, there it is. Saw the light.
Nice. How was tacking and stuff, like heel side and toe side tacking for you for the first time?
Dude, so here I am pretty deep in my wing thing. Toe side tacking is totally rad. Like, it's super fine. But I tell you, heel side's a tricky one, right?
Super tricky. So, yeah.
Yeah. Still, I'm not even 50 in honest agent style. I mean, I'll go out and surf for the most part. I'll go rip down winders. I'll do whatever. But tell you what, man, heel side tacks is still freaking something I have yet to unlock to its fullest potential.
Yeah. I was practicing them last year. I think it was my third season, and I get like quite a bit of water time on the island in the summer, and regular foot, I was getting them. Goofy was still the struggle. They finally started to unlock a little bit, but it's such a tricky maneuver coming through, twisting your body, getting powered up to the other side, letting your board come through without tacoing. It's like, Jesus.
Yeah, totally. And like how you have to whip the wing.
Yeah.
I mean, it's so much easier on the toe side, right?
Yeah, like, definitely.
Well, like toe side, again, toe side is another, it was one of those speed things, right? Like you need to carry fair speed to go into like, you know, a toe side tack. Yeah. But you don't need to come around super fast. Like you can like.
A bit cruisier.
Keep your.
Yeah.
Yeah. You can keep your upwind trajectory a lot longer than you think you can. You know what I mean? And just have that thing over that grab and go. But yeah. Totally. But, and I will tell you, like, so back to the travel thing, like, you know, one is that tacking really helps in the surf in certain situations, especially when, like, I ride surf in my natural stance no matter what. So I'm a regular footer in Peru, which is near and dear to my heart, which I think every wing foiler, every foiler period needs to go to in their lifetime, whether they go toe at Chicama and they'll just have their mind blown.
That place looks phenomenal.
Like go foil heaven, or whether you wing up in northern Peru at a place like Negritos or Tres Cruces or something like that, where you just get on a wave for, you know, forever, you know, and it's the wing sits behind you because it's offshore, side offshore, and you're just like, what's going on here? I'm just rode away for a mile, you know?
Yeah, that'd be phenomenal.
But I ride, you know, I'm regular footer. They're all lefts in Peru. And I still love to ride backside. Like, I never switch my feet. I mean, I switch my feet. But, like, even kite surfing, I wouldn't always just try to ride front side. Like, I really would like riding, you know, on my backhand. And winging is the same way for me. I still love riding waves on my backhand. Mainly because, like, when you carve backhand bottom turn, it feels super cool. When you come off the top, you're like leaning down into the wave, you know, and it's really cool. But that upwind, like, toe side tack is pretty key when you're a regular footer in the lefts.
Yeah.
So you're not always turning away from the wave, so you can actually turn into the wave way quicker. So,
oh, yeah. Going down the line like that, you would have to. Yeah, definitely. You don't really have a choice. What are you going to do? Jive? No, not really. Like, it's easy.
Yeah,
thing.
Totally.
Huh. All right, so Peru's.
Yeah, when you can just flick the thing over and, like, be right in the pot, you know, right in the right spot, it's amazing.
Yeah, key word.
Yeah, I would say.
Key word, it's amazing if you can get it done.
Yeah.
Oh, shit.
But yeah, I would say Peru, bucket listed for wing foilers. Okay. And you know, just foiling in general. I mean, this place we go to in northern Peru, like, we unlocked a couple just absolutely amazing downwinders there, which, you know, I'm telling all my sup downwind buddies, like, it's mental, you know, because, like, sup downwinding, you know, in at the river is one thing, and like that really short period kind of like high wind river type, you know, energy, swell energy, and then all of a sudden you get in a situation where you're like in actual swell energy, like, you know, and you're out in the middle of the ocean and you're riding like 21-22 second 1.5 foot swell, you know, it's like, and you go forever. It's just with a wing, you know, all that kind of stuff. It's like an absolute different experience. And there's some downwinders in northern Peru, you know, 14-18. Yeah, geez, you can go from this one place all the way to Mancra, 20 miles long, that are just magical. Absolutely magical. You can kind of get it all, right? You can get the surf, go surf your foil, you know, wing foil and surf, your brains out, you go tofoil your brains out, then you go downwind your brains out. Not so bad.
No.
And the water's reasonably warm.
Is it? Yeah. Like, yeah. What kind of suit?
Most 3.2 would be the max. So,
oh man, that's sunshine. Well, hey man, is there anything else you want to chat about? Or do you want to wrap this thing up? Or
yeah, man, no. I mean, it's been awesome. Awesome talking to you.
Absolutely.
I'm honored that you've reached out to have me on this, on your podcast. That's really cool. And I'm just really stoked to be able to talk about Ride Engine and wing foiling and how stoked on it I am myself, man. It's really weird, like, to witness. I mean, I feel like I didn't really witness the birth of kiteboarding, or like, because I kind of started late in the kiteboard thing, but to see a new sport emerge and be on the front edge of that, because I work in the industry, and be able to design, you know, products for that, and work with our designers and engineers to make that stuff, it's super cool. You know, growing our, you know, spreading this, the magic and the stoke of this wing foiling thing, and is really important. And it's cool that you're on that same wavelength, you know, to get more people, you know, not just involve sort of businesses on grow, but just involve, because it's, man, it's super fucking fun.
Yeah.
It gets insane. I mean, I've met people down here where it's like, you know, here we are, this young wing foil thing, and it's like changed their lives. Like, they're, you know, chasing it, reshuffled the whole deck of how they do their work so they could be here to just, you know, participate in wing foiling. It's pretty rad. So if we can keep spreading that vibe, it'll be good.
Yeah.
Good times.
Definitely. Definitely. Well, hey, man. Well, hey, thanks for meeting today and chatting. And thanks everybody for tuning in, and we'll catch you guys all next time.
Awesome, man. Later.